fellow peanuts, and welcome to anyone who is new to the channel or to my podcast. Now, this podcast covers true crime cases that may not be suitable for young listeners. There may be some graphic and violent content, so listener's discretion has been advised. Now, hi everybody, and welcome to episode 14. I hope you all enjoyed the last episode and our special feature on Ed Kemper. I should let you know though, guys, I am actually thinking about getting some t-shirts printed up and thinking of doing a bit of a competition. However, you guys will need to comment on the videos if you really do want me to start doing some merch. I'll be uploading a video shortly of the ones that will be available. And thank you so much to everyone at the moment who's been watching my videos or listening to the podcast. It's been a whole lot of fun for me. And also a bit of a side note, guys, the next episode might be off topic. I haven't quite decided whether it's going to be the next episode or the episode after that, but I'm going to be doing a episode on the children of God. This was suggested by one of my listeners, and I really think I want to get to it. I don't know if I can talk about it as well, but I'll let you know. I've actually had a jury summons, but maybe that's definitely something I can do like a separate video on, and I can tell you about my experience as a jury, as part of like a selection for a jury. But for this podcast, we're going to be heading back to our usual programming. This week, my state is going to be Wisconsin. And I'm not sure if you guys have heard of our serial killer today, but I think he's pretty famous myself. I do love a good horror film, and he was certainly a perfect match for that genre. And it would be Edward Theodore Gein, and he was otherwise known as Eddie, or two of his other nicknames, which are a little bit more disturbing. He was called the Butcher of Plainfield, or sometimes he was even called the Plainfield Ghoul. Now, Eddie would inspire one of my favourite characters of all time, Norman Bates from Psycho, or from the TV show Bates Motel. The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Leatherface in particular, and Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Some of the stuff from this podcast may disturb some of my viewers, or definitely some of my listeners. Definitely advising listener and viewer discretion this time around, guys. Some of those details can be quite disturbing. And if anyone has actually watched Silence of the Lambs, then the stories involve the killings of Buffalo Bill. And if you haven't, prepare yourself to be a little bit shocked, guys. So Edward Theodore Gein, going forward, though, I'm going to be calling him Eddie, guys. It's just much easier. He was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin the 27th of August, 1906. His parents were George and Augusta. George would be described as a weak and an alcoholic man. He wasn't really able to hold down a job for long periods of time, which would cause a lot of friction inside of his marriage. And Augusta, she was a domineering figure in the family and really would allow her husband to make any decisions around the boys. That's right. Eddie had an older brother by the name of Henry. But we're going to get back to hearing a little bit more about Henry in a little while. But here is one fact I will give you. Henry was 7 years older than Eddie. Now, Augusta was deeply religious, and despite her contempt and obvious dislike for her husband, she would not even contemplate or talk about divorce. She would never even think about it, and this was one of the biggest sins in her religion, to even think about divorce or even get divorced. So, but we're not talking about like an everyday Joe religion. She was borderline fanatical about her beliefs. And the things that she would put on her sons and tell them were just really out of this world, like really, really fanatical stuff, guys. She wanted her boys to have a really strict and moral code, and she would tell the boys that the world was full of evil and that women were the vessels of all things sin-related. And drinking and being immoral, they would be the instruments of the devil. Now, she would also insist on the teachings of the Bible every day. She would put, I kid you not, the fear of God into these boys, that they would go to hell if they had any type of sexual desires and any thoughts of acting on those sexual desires. Her word was final in this household, and she would force all of her beliefs and her fanatical behavior onto her husband and to her boys. Now, guys, I'm not sure if you guys have seen Psycho, but it's very much the mum and that domineering figure of, you'll do as I say, women are not to be talked to, women are not to be, you know, they're just the vessels of all things evil in her eyes. And the world was full of sin and the world was full of evil. But imagine being a young boy or even a teenager or anything like that, and these beliefs are being told to you on a regular basis. That women were just evil, and you've got obviously hormones and you've got desires and stuff like that. And it just feels like she put all of these just not great thoughts about women. And it was just, it really, I don't even know the word that I'm thinking of, but it would just stifle you. I think that's the word I'm thinking of, stifle. It's just, it's a whole nother level. Right, guys, it's just a whole nother level. I'm not talking, you know, believe in God and make sure that, you know, you're going to do all the things that to make sure you go to heaven and, you know, all good things and asking for forgiveness. This is next level, like just fear, pure fear in those boys. Now, I don't know if it was George who owned the grocery store business or it was Augusta. Articles I've read, there's just a bit of contradiction on each of the pieces of information. But look, let's just roll with it, whether they worked there or they owned it. But the year that Ed was born, the grocery business would start to be run, whether it be by Augusta or George or whatever it was. But it would be bringing in a fair amount of money into the household, and it would allow the family to live really quite comfortably. But enough money would be saved by 1914 that the family was able to buy a farm and some land in a much more rural area. Now, which according to their mum was away from the sins of the city, and her family would no longer be surrounded by immoral filth. It definitely suited Augusta that the nearest neighbours were almost a quarter of a mile away. If she could have kept those boys away from the big, bad and evil world, she certainly would have. However, these boys, they found it that it was necessary for them to attend school. Now, I don't know if that was the town required that. I'm not sure, because surely there would have been an option to homeschool. However, these boys did attend the school. But it really wasn't the best experience for Eddie. He would be described as shy and effeminate. And he was a real target for those typical bullies, and people would often shun him as he was just a little bit of a weird kid that liked to talk to himself, and he'd laugh at his own jokes that he'd be saying inside his own head. And just to make matters worse, Augusta would yell at him or discourage him with stories that he would be going to hell if he had any type of friendships with anybody. But one thing that Eddie would really enjoy about school more than anything was reading. And this was a world he could retreat into. He would escape into books. And this would really stay with him all through his life. And he would learn some pretty repulsive things later in his life after reading. But we're going to be coming back to that. Now, this is not the first time we've heard of serial killers retreating into their own world and finding something to escape. Now, I imagine for Eddie, it was just a completely different world to the one that he had with mum and dad. Like, it was an ability to escape from what was going on in his home life. But during their childhoods, those two boys, Eddie and Henry, they'd only really have each other as their friends, and they never really had any spare time to enjoy any parts of their childhood. Instead, they would actually help around the house and around the farm, during various chores. And Eddie would do everything within his power to please his mum, but he really couldn't seem to ever do that. She was verbally abusive to both of those boys, and her reasoning behind that kind of treatment was that she would fear that they would become like their father, whom she really saw as a failure. But despite all the horrible ways that she would treat Eddie and, you know, his brother, he would see his mum as all things pure and good and follow her orders to a letter. So it's just, it's not unsurprising because he's put her up on this pedestal because she's saying that, you know, all these good things and her father is a failure. So I'm not really sure that he had any other choice. I mean, if dad was an alcoholic and he wasn't able to hold down a job and your mum is the one that's holding your household and stuff like that, your mum is definitely going to be put up on that pedestal. So I can imagine. And that's the way that it went. And excuse me, I'm just going to take a really quick drink. By the way, Fanta, pineapple, and grapefruit? Sorry. Got really thirsty then. But it's all the talking. So in April 1940, Eddie's father, George, he'd actually pass away. And Eddie would look to his older brother as really strong and really hardworking, and he wanted to emulate him, be like him. So after their dad passed away, both boys would take some odd jobs around the town to help support their mum and the farm's expenses. Now, the townspeople would say that the boys were reliable and trustworthy, and Henry and Eddie would find most of their work just would be of the handyman style. But Eddie would also babysit for the neighbours. Now, he would enjoy this job the most because he better related to the kids than his peers or people of his own age. Now, given this information, it does make me consider whether there was a mild form of retardation. And when I refer to that, I mean emotional and possibly social. So he just seems like he's stunted his growth. And we're going to be talking about through this podcast, there's just some things that will make you really think he's very childlike. So my thought process is it a mild form of emotional retardation, or is it an IQ? There's just some things that just make me think there's some mental health issues going on there of that kind. Just because at this stage he's in his 30s and he relates better to children, so does everybody sort of understand where my mind's going with that one? It's just something a little bit peculiar. But around the same time as this, right, so around the same time that his dad's passed away, Henry would start dating a single divorced mum from town. But he would begin to really question the level of attachment that Eddie had towards his mum. Now, Henry would start to talk negatively about their mum. He would criticise her beliefs, what their upbringing was like, and this would really upset Eddie and leave him quite shell-shocked about his brother saying these things. And I think this would lead to Henry's mysterious death. In May 1944, Henry and Eddie were bedding off some vegetation, but the fire would become out of control at this stage. And somehow the pair, they get separated while trying to put the fire out. And night would come and Eddie would lose sight of his brother. But once the fire was out, his brother would still be missing. Now, this would concern Eddie enough that he would call the police, as he couldn't seem to find him. A search party was really quickly organised, and the body of Henry would be found laying face down. The police were really suspicious, though, because given that where the body was found was seemingly untouched by the fire and there was some bruising on his head. Now, although his death would be determined as asphyxiation, no investigation and no autopsy taken. So many people would believe that Eddie had killed his brother because of the way he spoke of his mum and the way he started treating her as well. Now, I've got to be honest, guys, there is a little bit of me that goes, I think that's really possible, because Henry was turning against their mum and Eddie would have not stood for that, right? Like, he's put her up on this pedestal and Henry's basically contradicting everything that Eddie has ever believed in his life. So it really wouldn't shock me if ultimately Henry had started talking about their mum again, and then Eddie had just, in a moment of anger, whatever you want to pick something up, bashed him over the head, and then just walked off. Like, it just really wouldn't surprise me. because there would have to be a certain amount of anger, I think, underneath that, underneath Eddie at the moment. He's got no companionship. He's got no real relationships. The only relationship he's got is with his brother and with his mum. So a little peculiar, a little peculiar. But this would leave Eddie and Augusta living together, but they wouldn't be living alone for very long, because shortly after Henry had died, Augusta would have a fairly severe stroke, and that would leave her paralyzed. And Eddie would end up devoting the rest, like his life, to looking after her. But on December 29th in 1945, she would ultimately die. She'd had a number of strokes during the time Eddie was looking after her. And there's a quote from a book about Eddie in particular that I found really quite disturbing. He lost his only friend and he was all alone in this world. And she was his one true love. He'd spent 39 years under the same roof as his mum, served at every one of her whims, and then she's gone. Augusta had spent so many of her years with her fanatic beliefs about sex and women and lust and teachings of the Bible to both of her boys that Eddie would pass into adulthood without any female companionship other than his mum. Something severely disturbing that I read was during the year after his brother's death that his mum would allow him to sleep in the same bed as her. Now, no offense, guys, no grown man should be sleeping in the same bed as your elderly mother. Like, I'm sorry. No. Bom, bom. Yeah. He not only put her up on such a pedestal, and I realize I'm saying that word a lot and I feel really bad, I just can't think of another word at this stage, but he had her so high up in his beliefs that no woman was ever going to compare to her, considering everything that she taught them and everything that she was sort of teaching them. I don't think they had much of a choice, right? Like, I think at the end of the day, this was their, this was his whole world. She was basically what his whole world, you know, his companion. But he would remain at the farmhouse and he would perform odd jobs to get some money. But Eddie would board off most of the rooms that Augusta had lived in. Now, that was mainly upstairs, the parlor and the living room downstairs, which to me, that seems like pretty much the whole house. He would use just a small kitchen area as well as a room that was just located off the kitchen that he'd end up turning into his bedroom. So he's got two rooms, a kitchen and like his little bedroom. But the death of his mum seemed to really change Eddie. He was extremely lonely. He would spend most of his free time reading books about Nazis, the South Sea headhunters and shipwrecks. Sometimes he would read books about anatomy. He would also read books. He would also read pulp magazines. But during his time of this reading, he would learn the process of shrinking heads and how to exhume bodies from graves and the anatomy of the human body. This is sort of where Eddie's really bizarre habit would start, and one that would end with some very odd and disgusting things. But he would start his nightly visits to the local graveyards. And I mean multiple. I don't mean just one. And he would read in the newspaper specifically about the obituaries, and he would learn of the most recent deaths of local women, which we're going to get into. Having never really enjoyed the company of the opposite sex, he would get his lust from the graves, from the visitations to the graves at night, although he would swear to the police that he'd never had sex with a dead woman because they smelled too bad. But he would later say that a force built up in me when he was referring to the loss of his mum, and he began visiting those local cemeteries and digging up the bodies of deceased women with the intention to create a woman's suit that he could wear. He did take a particular pleasure in peeling off their skin from the bodies and wearing it. he was curious to know what it was like to have breasts and a vagina, and he would quite often dream of being a woman. He was fascinated with women because of the power that they hold over men, and his aim was to actually physically recreate a version of his mum. And he would later admit to the police that he wanted to become her and crawl into her skin. He would also craft body parts into some household items, as well as pieces of clothing, such as gloves made from human flesh, masks made from their faces, and chairs that have been upholstered using skin. And a pair of lips would be attached to a window shade pull cord and a belt made of gloves. He would really acquire quite the collection of body parts, and some of them were preserved heads. But on one occasion, a young boy that he sometimes babysat, he would actually say that Eddie showed him some heads that he'd keep in his bedroom. He would claim, though, Eddie would claim they were shriveled heads from the South Seas, relics from those headhunters. And when this young boy would tell people about this experience, a lot of people would just say, hey, that's a figment of a little boy's imagination, he's lying. But then somewhat a little time later, that boy was really vindicated when two other men would pay a visit to Eddie Gaines' farm, and they would see those preserved heads. They would presume, though, that this was just a Halloween costume. They never presumed that they were actual heads. But rumours would begin to circulate, and soon most of the townspeople would be gossiping about the strange things and the occurrences that were going on at Eddie's house. Now, before we get into the murder victims, I'm going to discuss four suspected victims. There's no convictions. However, the police do believe that Eddie had something to do with them. Thought I'd share with these ones with you in particular. I'm not 100% sold on it though, but we're going to get into it. So there are four missing cases that baffled police during the 1940s and 50s. The first would be an 8-year-old girl by the name of Georgia Jean Weckler. Now, Georgia, she disappeared shortly after being dropped off near her home in May 1947. There'd be a huge search for this little girl in the Jefferson area of Wisconsin. She would never be seen or heard from again. However, the only evidence that they would find were tire marks from where she had last been seen. Now, these would be identified as belonging to a Ford, as well as witnesses would say that they saw a dark colored Ford sedan right near the spot where Georgia had gone missing specifically. Eddie at this time would own a black Ford. Now, I've got to say, given that Eddie was more inclined to exhume the bodies of older women, I'm just not sure, and given his childlike state, I'm just not sold on him harming an 8-year-old. That's my personal belief. I'm just not sold on that one. In 1953, a 15-year-old Evelyn Hartley from La Crosse in Wisconsin, she'd vanished while she'd been babysitting. Her dad became concerned after she failed to call him as a part of her check-in. He would call the house where she would be babysitting several times, but he would get no answer. So he'd drive over to that house. Nobody was answering while he was knocking, and this only worried him, as you can imagine, even more. And he happened to peer through a window, and he'd notice some things around the house that belonged to his daughter. In particular, there would be a shoe, and he'd see her glasses. He would also think that he saw some blood, but he just wasn't sure. But he'd find a window in the basement that he was able to break through and get into that house. Once he entered that house, he saw things that would only frighten a father more. He saw more of a struggle. He'd call the police, and when they arrived, they'd find more blood stains, and a bloody handprint would be on a nearby house. There'd just be further evidence of a struggle of some sort. The worst was definitely fear during the search for Evelyn. that nothing more than clothing with a couple more blood stains on it would ever be found. That after Eddie's arrest, he would be questioned, but he would pass two lie detector tests and the police would certainly not find any evidence of Evelyn in the house. I'm not sold on this one either. I think something really horrible happened to this girl, but I'm just not sold on it being any game. However, the next two, I do think there's a possibility. In 1952, Victor Travis and Ray Burgess, they'd stop at a bar in Plainfield, Wisconsin, after hunting for deer most of the day. After spending some time at the bar, and I mean quite a few hours, guys, these two would never be seen or heard from again either. Once again, a huge search would occur, but it turned up absolutely nothing. But the two had been hunting that day on the farm next to Eddie's, and he would have objections to them doing this on the day that they went missing. Now, given that I do think that Eddie killed his brother, I do think it's plausible that he has killed those two. And maybe they got into a disagreement on the farm. I'm not entirely sure. But there's just there's a little bit of suspicion on that one for me, just given that he objected to them being near his property. Maybe he feared that they'd found something on his property. I don't know. But in addition to those four, he would also be tentatively linked to the disappearance of his neighbour, James Walsh, aged 32. Now, James and his wife lived right near Eddie, and he would go around and do the odd job for her and her husband. But Eddie was also investigated for this particular missing occurrence in August 1956, but they were unable to link him to anything. So there's also a disappearance of another girl by the name of Judy from Auroraville and an Irene Keating. Now, I've got to say, I don't think, other than the two men, I'm really skeptical. I'm really, really skeptical. When we go through the murders, and by the way, he's technically not a serial killer because he only killed two people. But I do suspect he might have done some more things. So his grave robbing, it would come to an end in around 1954. As a person that he was apparently doing this with, his name was Gus, he would be placed in a home. But this is where Eddie would start to murder people, they're saying. But if you believe that he was involved in the disappearance of those other people, then this definitely wouldn't be, right? But in the winter of 1954, a lady by the name of Mary Hogan would disappear from the tavern which she owned. Now, the police would discover blood on the floor, and this would lead out to the parking lot. But they would also find a bullet on the floor, and the police could only once again guess that there was foul play. However, there was no body, and there was no sort of further evidence, so they really couldn't do much more. Everything's about to change in this small little town, though, in a morning in November in 1957. Everybody knew a lady by the name of Bernice. Now, Worden, I think is how you're saying it, because she would own the local hardware store. But on this day in November, the local residents, they would try and visit the store, but it was closed, which was strange, but not unheard of given it was the deer hunting season. So they didn't think it was particularly strange. But Bernice's son, who also happened to be a deputy sheriff, Frank Worden, he'd go to the store and he would find that the register was open and there were bloodstains on the floor. Now, Frank would tell investigators that the last person to see his mum had actually been Eddie Gain. And the morning of her disappearance, the last receipt would be for antifreeze and that it had been bought by Eddie. It had been signed by his mum, Bernice. But Eddie would be arrested at the local grocery store and a search would begin on his farm and at his farm, and we're going to go through what was found on the farm later. But I can safely say, and I can definitely safely say this, guys, you're going to be revolted, okay? Given what I talked about before, there's a little bit more. But while investigators were questioning him, he would actually reply, "She isn't missing. She's at the farm right now." So while the police were searching a shed, they'd find Bernice's decapitated body hanging upside down. She'd been shot with a 22 caliber rifle, and her head would be found inside a burlap sack in the house. So technically, yeah, she's not missing, she's in the house. So imagine that. Just imagine the shock and horror. So when the police had been searching through Eddie's house, they would find whole human bones and fragments, a waste basket of human skin covering chairs, several skulls on the bedposts, female skulls, some of them with their tops, they'd been shot off, bowls that had been made from human skulls, a corset made from from female torso, skinned from shoulders to waist, leggings that had been made from females, from human leg skin, masks made from the skin of female heads, Mary Hogan's face mask in a paper bag, Mary Hogan's skull in a box, Bernice's entire head in a burlap sack, Bernice's heart in a plastic bag in the front of Eddie's potbelly stove, 9 vulva in a shoebox, and a young girl's dress and the vulvas of 2 females judged to have been about 15 years old, a belt made of nipples, 4 noses, a pair of lips on a window shade drawstring, a lampshade that had been made from a human face, fingernails from female fingers, and a female human nipple doorbell. Now, even when I'm listing that out, I'm feeling absolutely revolted a little bit inside. It's just, yeah. I did put some pictures up in the background as well, so I am sorry. For any listeners, I did want to advise you that there is definitely graphic content in this one. He was asked where the other body parts came from, and this is where things took a little bit more of a dark turn for him. He would say during 1947 and 1952 to 1954, he would make nightly visits to 3 local cemeteries and exhume the recently buried bodies. Now, most of these bodies, to be honest, were people around his mum's age, as he wanted a bodysuit that matched her. He would say that all the remains found at the house were those of the people who were already dead and not of people that he had killed. But he would later admit that he had killed Mary Hogan. During his confessions of both murders, Eddie would claim that he was in a dazed state and he couldn't quite remember all of the details of the murders. I do think there is something fundamentally wrong with Eddie Gannon. I don't think there's any part of me that doesn't recognise that. It's not normal that someone wants to create a bodysuit of their mum and become their mum. So I do think there was something mentally not all there with him. It just makes me feel a little sick inside when I talk about all this stuff. So sorry, guys. One thing that really stuck with me, though, was that he didn't show any signs of remorse or emotion during his confession. He was extremely factual and really, really matter of fact. And that, to me, points to signs that something's not completely right there. And there were times that he would even seem cheerful during it, almost not understanding the gravity of his situation. And this comes back to what I was saying about before, guys, about the emotional retardation. He had no concept of how big his crimes actually were. And I think this is the childlike behaviour we've seen in the past with him. And just a couple of days after he was arrested, he would be charged with first-degree murder, but he would plead not guilty by reason of insanity. Now, his sanity was definitely in question, right, guys? And that's why it was suggested that he, you know, he would plead not guilty by reason of insanity. He underwent a bucket load of psychological tests, which definitely concluded that he was emotionally impaired. And psychologists and psychiatrists who interviewed him asserted that he was schizophrenic and a sexual psychopath. His condition specifically, though, was attributed to his unhealthy relationship with his mum and his upbringing, and apparently he suffered from conflicting feelings about women, his natural attraction to them, and the unnatural attitudes that his mother had, like, basically poured and instilled into him. And this love-hate relationship feelings towards women, they became really exaggerated and eventually would become a full-blown psychosis. Now, I've got to say, I'm not shocked again. Like, this is so similar to what I was talking about on my last podcast, guys, with Ed Kemper. You can almost see all the signs of how this was going to go. You know, there is, it's that mother relationship again and just that nurture. And it's just, it's not there again. So when Eddie was undergoing further interrogation and all those psychological tests, they would continue to search the land around his farm even more. The police would discover that the farmhouse itself had the remains of 10 women. Now, although Eddie would swear that the remaining body parts were those of the women taken from the local graveyards, police were definitely very skeptical on this. Now, they believed it was highly possible for the remains to have come from more women that he possibly murdered. But the police could only ascertain at the time, right, guys, whether those remains came from the women's corpses, and they had to examine whether they were the bodies that he claimed to have robbed. And after much of the controversy about the morality of exhuming bodies, police were actually permitted to dig up the graves of those women that Eddie had claimed that he had desecrated. Now, all of the coffins showed clear signs of tampering, and in most cases, the bodies or parts of the bodies were definitely missing. So there would be another discovery on his land that would raise the issue once again, whether he did in fact murder a third person. So on November 29th, about a month after he'd been arrested, police would unearth some human skeletal remains on the farm. And it was suspected that this had actually been the body part of Victor Travis, the guy who disappeared years earlier. But the remains were immediately taken to a crime lab and they're examined. But tests would show that that was actually not a male, but a large middle-aged woman. So possibly another graveyard souvenir. And the police really did try, but all they could do was implicate him in the disappearance of Victor Travis and the three other people that we discussed before. And the only murders that he would be held responsible for were Bernice Worden and Mary Hogan. And after Eddie had spent a period of about 30 days in a mental institution, and he was evaluated to be mentally incompetent to stand trial for that first degree murder, the people of Plainfield were absolutely furious at this. They were furious that he wouldn't be tried for the murder of Bernice, but there's very little they can do to influence the court's decision, right? He would be committed to a hospital in, I believe you say it as Werpen, in Wisconsin. And soon after Eddie was sentenced to the mental institution, his farm would go up for auction along with some of his other belongings. Now, the following year, in March 1958, the Plainfield Volunteer Fire Department, they were called to his farm. The house was on fire and it really quickly burned to the ground. And a lot of people really were quite relieved at this. The police would believe that an arsonist was responsible for the blaze because there's no electrical wiring problems in the house. And even though they carried out a thorough investigation, no suspect was ever found. When Eddie had heard of his house burning down, he simply said, just as well. And although most of his belongings were destroyed in that fire, there were some things that were able to be salvaged. And what was left would be auctioned off. That would include his farm equipment and his car. So Eddie's 1949 Ford sedan, which was used to haul the bodies, we'll call it, caused a bidding war. And it would eventually be sold for $760. And the man that purchased this car, he put it on display in a county fair where thousands of people would pay a quarter to get a peek at the Gain Ghoul car. Now, I'm sorry. That is, in my opinion, one of the most disgusting things that I could ever think of. Like, really? That's the way you get the, no, just, I'm just absolutely appalled. Absolutely appalled. On July 26, in 1984, Eddie would die of respiratory and heart failure due to cancer. He would die at the Mendota Mental Health Institution. His grave site is at the Plainfield Cemetery, where he would steal bodies from, and it's frequently vandalized. Souvenirs like to chip bits off that gravestone. In 2000, the whole thing was stolen. His whole entire gravestone was stolen, but it was recovered in Seattle, and it's now in a museum. I have to say, guys, this podcast has been particularly hard just because there are times where you want to be sick, like just how revolting he is. But I do really feel sorry for Eddie Gain. I think he had a lot wrong with him. And I think his victims didn't get nearly the justice that they deserved. But I think that he was in the best possible place that he could have ever been in. Right, like there is just, he's in the best place that he could have ever been in. Thank you all so much for listening to episode 14. If you like this podcast, please hit the subscribe button. Go and listen to any other episodes. If you are new, hit the bell if you want to be notified of anything new on the channel. But have a great weekend, my fellow peanuts, and I hope you all have a fabulous time. See you later. Oh.